Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Wonderful Dar Williams singing with the legendary Pete Seeger, who lived to be 94 years old. He was 92 when he sang that song. I was there. We miss him so much. And David Burns, who wrote the words to that song, except for the one word, Solartopia, which I wrote. I am Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, back to you with you for another Green Power and Wellness Hour. And we have a dynamite pair of guests, and my buddy Joel Siegel, who's with us regularly. And Joel is in North Carolina, a great, great leader, a convener of the National COVID Response Team, and sort of the parent organization of the Monday COVID election protection group, which coming week will meet Tuesday, because Monday is Memorial Day, and it'll be at 5 p.m. Eastern time. You want to jump in, email me, Harvey Wasserman, at call me Sluggo at solartopia@gmail. I've always loved the name Sluggo. Kids love to say Sluggo. They always say Sluggo, S-W-U-G-G-O, but I was once a baseball player, and I find that the older I get, the better I was. And so you ask me next year, I'll tell you about how I won Wimbledon. we got this whole hour with the great Maya coming, and I'm going to let Joel introduce Maya. But I got to tell you, folks, I mean, the headlines, this hydroxychloroquine or whatever is really doing a number on Trump's head. He wasn't exactly all there to begin with, but man, he is over the top. We're going to talk about that. Those of you who are lucky enough to be watching this on video, please do. I haven't shaved for a while. Joel has, and Maya doesn't need to. But Joel, if you that's right, Joel, if you introduce yourself, and then Maya, we are going to have a dynamite hour here.
Well, Sluggo. Well, first of all, you got your nickname because you were you hit the softball out of the park when you lived on the hippie farms. Is that correct?
Well, yes. At least, but you know, when you play baseball as a hippie, if you remember the game, you didn't play. I mean, that's
well, so, you know what? I was a great baseball player, except for hitting, fielding, and catching and throwing. I was a great tennis player, except for my forehand, backhand, and my serve. But other than that, I did play high school basketball, but you were the state champion, from what I understand, of your high school, correct? Weren't you the state champion your senior year?
I was the champion of my high school. I was number one, but those were the days, and you know, we did not play Donald Trump's team, but he has gone absolutely nuts. He's gone absolutely nuts about vote by mail. I mean, this guy is really over the top. And you got to read the side effects of hydroxychloroquine, which he owns. You know, nobody has mentioned this. He has a financial stake in hydroxychloroquine.
Nobody's wait a second. You're telling me that Donald Trump is doing something for a fiduciary motive? That's like unusual, because it's not like he has the Trump Hotel in D.C. But I will tell you, I want to just tell your audience one thing that's very important. I did try Ajax and Mr. Clean, because I thought I had COVID-19 symptoms. And don't do it, because it burned my throat. And then I had a black light from the sixth grade. You know, I used to have a black light with my hippie posters. So I ingested it to illuminate myself, like Trump said. It did not work. Please do not do – I choked on it going down. Don't do that. In terms of the drug that he's taking, I did try it myself and I fell asleep, but don't take it. But anyway, I'm honored to be on the show with Maya Rockamore, who is, you know, running for Congress in Baltimore. Her late great husband, Congressman Cummings, who was very close to the congressman that I work for, John Conyers. You know, Maya is running for that seat, but I have to tell, I've known Maya now for close to 20 years. I think she's the most important progressive running for Congress right now. She's for Medicare for all, jobs for all, housing for all, eliminating minority health disparities. When Mr. Conyers needed someone to advocate for single payer Medicare for all, she was there. Former chief of staff for Charlie Rangel. So she's got all this experience. But if we're going to change the policy, we have to change the policymakers. And she spent years working in think tanks, and but she's also, you know, very, very dear, close friend of mine who fights for the people, not the power.
Well, Maya, it's great to have you on the show. And, you know, your husband was really a role model for so many of us. He was a great man. I was very sorry that he passed away, but, and I'm sure that you will do great things with that congressional seat, and I hope it becomes yours. So I know you want to talk about a lot of stuff, but I do want to start with vote by mail. I mean, this is just, these headlines. I do want to say one thing. Let me give you a little history. I lived in Columbus, Ohio. I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. And then I came back after many, many years. My parents dragged me back. I went from living on a hippie farm, literally in the same week, from living on a hippie farm to running a uniform business in Columbus, Ohio. It was like, you know, talk about taking a drug, because my parents had this business, and then, you know, being the only Jewish son, it was genetic. I had to come back there.
Yeah.
And so I wondered all those years, what the heck am I doing in Columbus, Ohio?
Uh-huh.
And then in 2004, and I, you know, I'm a historian. I've written a number of history books. I've got History of the United States right now called The People's Spiral of U.S. History. So I found myself back in Columbus, and I got a job teaching history after I ran my family business obligatory. I got a job teaching history at two colleges in Central Ohio. It was fantastic. And I got the job in the fall of 2004. And my buddy, Bob Fetrakis, was a political scientist at Columbus State, which is one of the schools I taught at, a community college. And he starts calling me about the 2004 election. I wouldn't have known, but he's a political scientist. And he starts telling me how they're stealing the election. John Kerry is running against George W. Bush.
Uh-huh.
And everybody knows that Kerry's going to win. And Bob is calling me with all this crazy stuff. Now, the thing about Bob, he's a brilliant, brilliant guy, but he's typographically challenged. In other words, he can't type.
Okay.
And
okay.
I can type. So that's the one thing I learned in ninth grade is how to type. So we started putting out these articles. And what they did in 2004 in Ohio was just absolutely shocking. I mean, I wrote a pamphlet, a guidebook, over 100 different ways that they stole the election. I mean, it was staggering. And I used to get so furious, I'd have to stand up, leave my typing chair, pick up things and throw them against the wall. That's how bad it was. And so that's how I learned about election protection. Now, Bob, my co-author, had already been in El Salvador in the 80s. He was an election protection guy in El Salvador. He said it was more civilized in El Salvador than it was in Ohio. I mean, you know, we had violence at the polls. These Republicans showed up and intimidated people. So I've been writing about that with Bob ever since. And we have a national group with Joel has helped convene, which I'm inviting people to, on election protection. What's changed now, and this is a long story short, what's changed now is that the national media finally understands what's been going on. I mean, they would laugh at us. They would cause, the Democrats would cause conspiracy theorists. They wouldn't have anything to do with us. We've been banging our heads against this wall for almost for 20 years, really since 2000. And finally, the New York Times is running these articles about, you know, look what Trump is doing. They finally got the message because they're scared. You can tell they are really scared.
And so everybody.
So what in your district, you're going to face the same stuff. Mm-hmm. What are you looking at?
So we're already actually facing it because of the coronavirus. Maryland has now gone to an all mail-in ballot situation, but that hasn't. It actually has translated into voter suppression by administrative fiat. We are a Democratic state run by a Republican governor. The State Board of Elections, of course, is under the state's purview. And we do have local boards of election as well. But this is what we've faced so far. In this mail-in ballot situation, people are not receiving their ballots or they're receiving their ballots late. We have had a situation where the State Board of Elections printed the wrong date on our ballots, meaning, and then that means something for the 7th Congressional District because they kept April 28th on the ballots, even though the election is now on June 2nd. That's a problem for my district because we actually had an election on April 28th. So that means that people are going to open their ballots, see April 28th at the top and say, oh, I already participated in this election, and throw it out. And there has been no education because we've pivoted to this mail-in ballot situation. The parties nor the State Board of Election have put any investment into educating people about how to actually complete their ballots and mail them in correctly. The number of polling places has been dramatically reduced. And so that means that a lot of people are not going to know where to go in order to, vote in person if that is what they choose to do. And then to top that off is that when people call the State Board of Elections and say, can I go and vote in person, they discourage them and say, no, the in-person election and polling places are only for people with special needs, which is actually not true. So what we have is a lot of misinformation going around that actually results in voter suppression. And that is what we need to watch out for in states across the country.
Man. Well, I will say one thing. Having observed elections since 2004, we need to complain bitterly about vote by mail and but we're 5.5 months out. And I will say that the alternative was 117,000 precincts where the local precinct captain did anything they felt like doing, including turning people away, giving them provisional ballots, which they would throw in the trash. So our challenge now, technically, vote by mail should be good. The major plus about vote by mail is that it's on paper. Most of the election theft that I witnessed with Bob and so many others, we've had other people come on, Steve Rosenfeld, Greg Palast, who actually did 2000, Bev Harris, Mimi Kennedy. There's a lot of people working on this. And the major change for the positive is that the ballots are on paper. And that's what we have to really, really safeguard.
So ballots are on paper. However, there's not a very good way to verify that they have received your ballot and counted it. Here in the state of Maryland, they've created a quote-unquote verification system that is only legitimate after the election is over, meaning that you can verify after the election is over whether your vote counted or not. which is, what's the point? If the election is over, then you find out, we didn't count your ballot because you failed to sign the outside of the envelope, which, by the way, is just another twist and turn here in the state of Maryland. They want you to sign an outside of the envelope and print your name on the outside of an envelope, which means that there is no privacy with regards to whose ballot it is. So this is a mess. So far, it's been a mess. Now, we do know that Oregon and Washington State have been successful in their mail-in ballot processes. But here in Maryland, where it's brand new, it's been a mess so far, and I'm prayerful about what's gonna happen in states across the country that are trying to pivot to mail-in ballot systems in the coronavirus era.
Well, we have to get really active with this. The network of activists, and to me, and Joel can chime in on this, the major problem we face is that the Democrats deactivated the Bernie revolution. In other words, they're so afraid of Bernie becoming president or the nominee that they just trashed all the millions of kids that were in his movement. And what we have to do to protect voter, you know, I'm less sanguine than most about vote by mail because I've seen the alternative. It's like what Winston Churchill said about democracy. Winston Churchill said about democracy that it's the worst form of government ever invented, except for all the other ones. and that's what we look at for vote by mail. Because I know that if we didn't have this vote by mail thing, we would be looking at 117,000 places where 117,000 podunk guys could just, or women could just flip the election, which they would do in a heartbeat. So we have this one horribly messy situation with the positive aspect that it is paper ballots. We also have, go ahead, Maya.
No, well, we also have to realize that COVID-19 is absolutely real. And so, you know, We saw in Wisconsin that people who, those champions of democracy who showed up in person to vote because they knew that their vote mattered, I think about 52 of them actually came down with COVID-19. So vote by mail is good because there is a paper trail, but there is also a way to protect people from getting COVID-19. And so I think that it's important to acknowledge that.
So here's the key. and not to quote Joe Biden, here's the key. The key is to get your people, our people, into the election boards. They have to be inside the apparatus that is administering the vote by mail. They can, we need, I know I just did, we, Joel's been, you know, the co-convener of these Zoom calls that we've been doing. And I've developed from that a guidebook of all the bad stuff that's associated with vote by mail. And there's a ton. I got to boil it down to about 20 major points, right? Mm-hmm. So if we got to look at these 20 points, and we got to figure out, and we got to get people inside to deal with them. We can't just say, oh, vote by mail, this and that, here's what they're doing. We got to go in there and be the people that are administrating it and to stop the people who are, and we know what's involved. Beforehand, it was impossible. You couldn't get your arms around it. Mm-hmm. We can get our arms around vote by mail.
Harvey?
There are 50 states, 3,000 or so counties. Joel is going to coordinate the effort in North Carolina. Bob is going to do it in Ohio. We got people in Arizona. We need in Maryland and, you know, two really great people to do nothing for the next 6 months, but go through every corner of what's happening with vote by mail in Maryland. You know, you have a congressional district. And that's your world, and that's fantastic. The presidential election is not a national election. It's an election in six states, and then six more, and then six more, basically. You got six prime swing states, six secondary swing states, six tertiary swing states. Mm-hmm. And we need people in every one of those states who knows everything that's going on about vote by mail. Joel?
Yeah, no, thank you. You know, one of the... Look, Maya Rockamore is a national treasure. And the reason why she's a national treasure, she's a progressive who's been in the party for years, but she was the chair of the Maryland Democratic Party, and she ran for governor. I think she would have won if her husband hadn't have died. I think she would have won. All that being said, I think what we really ought to do is ask Maya if she was to develop a strategy to A, vote by mail, stop voter suppression on a state by state basis, what would that be? I want to make three tertiary points. The first point is the New York Times. I hope that everyone has read this. It says Republicans to pursue a crackdown on voting. Now, you know, the Republicans believe there's this gigantic, fraudulent voting by Democrats, which is not based on any facts. They just, you know, make it up, right? So now they're going to, I kid you not, 50,000, they're recruiting 50,000 people to go to the polls, which means what are those 50,000 people going to do? They're going to have Confederate flags. They'll probably have militias. They're going to intimidate and scare people not to vote. And who are they going to, and they're going to check their ballots. Whose ballots are they going to check? Suspicious ballots. who has suspicious ballots? African Americans and Hispanic. And because in Shelby versus Holder, the Supreme Court said, oh, racism is over. It's, you know, we don't need preclearance from the DOJ. It's over. I mean, we all know that. Everyone knows that racism is over. There's no more voter intimidation. But I think the question I would ask is, what's the Democratic Party's plan on to battle voter suppression, vote by mail? What's their plan? What's Biden's plan? And we have, and now I can tell you that I know there is no plan. If the Republicans have a plan, what should our plan be? And I think that's the question that I think I would, if it's okay, you're the host of the show, but what I would say, what would Maya do?
Maya, well, not what would you do? What are you going to do?
So unfortunately, so in this scenario, what I think is that we actually need to federalize the entire election process. No more of these tiered situations where you've got local, state, federal, and everybody doing the chicanery. Unfortunately, you know, this current era that we're in with Donald Trump is nothing but pure corruption. And so then becomes one of security. If we actually standardized and federalized all U.S. elections, how do you make it secure? And then that becomes a question of technology, meaning that, you know, if we're moving toward an era where we don't necessarily have to turn up to a poll in order to vote, is there a way to actually secure the vote? Whether we're talking about blockchain technology that is connected to unique individual identifiers that can't be corrupted, or if we're talking about some other mechanism. I do believe that we need to approach an era where voting is as easy as flipping on a television. We do not need to have all of these blocks. We don't need to have all of these people involved in every level to potentially, certainly suppress the vote. But, you know, unfortunately, I don't trust this administration. They are corrupt. They are malfeasant. This Trump administration is not to be trusted in any way. I think that it's important that we recognize that, you know, Trump recently appointed a crony to go in as the postmaster general. We need to be keeping a laser focused eye on what's happening at the post office. We, in terms of this election period, it's going to have to be one of contestation, meaning that anything that smells wrong, we have to challenge. It's going to have to be one of education, meaning we not only turn out the vote, not only do we educate people, but not only do we turn out the vote, but we also educate people about how to vote correctly in this new era. So, you know, I do think we need to nationalize our election system. We need to create security measures for an election system that works for the 21st century.
Well, you're 100% right. That was beautifully stated. You know, we do have 5 states that have pretty much perfected vote by mail. Okay, Colorado, Utah, Oregon, Washington, and Hawaii. They've been doing it a long time, and now California is 100% vote by mail. And I want to point out that the very first vote by mail election, after Trump complained that if we have vote by mail, no Republican will ever get elected, right? It was won by a Republican in an LA district, a North LA district, where Katie Hill resigned. God knows why she resigned, but she resigned. And there was a runoff, and it was all vote by mail, and the Republican won, for God's sakes. So, you know, Maya, you have the opportunity. I mean, I'm thinking this is really a national revolution. Never in the history of the United States have we had fair or reliable elections.
No, we haven't.
I mean, it just doesn't happen. Never happened. And I will point out, you know, we mentioned the claim that there's fraudulent votes. In the eyes of the Republican Party, I'll put my head in theirs for a minute. In the eyes of Donald Trump, any vote that's cast by someone who is not a white millionaire is a fraudulent vote, by definition. That's exactly what's going on. So you are a powerful figure in Maryland. You can, you know, the way we, whatever the future is for a federal system, the Constitution basically gives the power to the states. And in most cases, the states defer to the counties. So you in Maryland have the opportunity to really nail a vote by mail system for now and for all future. I mean, you've got your congressional district to work in, and then for all future, if we can get to a reliable vote by mail, we'll have made a major change.
I think that we're going to find out that even the vote by mail is not our ideal scenario, but I do think that it's better than nothing right now, or better than showing up at a poll. That being said, let me just say this. You know, I am a graduate of Prairie View A&M University. It's an HBCU in Texas. It's smack dab in the middle of a red county. And when I was in school there back in the early 90s, late 80s, they basically intimidated the black students, the local white power structure, intimidated the black students into not voting or by arresting students who did vote. And so we organized a march up to the county courthouse and we demanded that they expunge the students' records. But Prairie View is significant because it was the school in 1979 that a challenge went all the way up to the Supreme Court because the Prairie View students have been continually harassed by the Republican power structure in Texas. It was a 1979 Supreme Court decision basically deciding that students, if they are in college, they can actually vote where they go to school. That is the decision that actually decided it for the land involving my school. And so with that, you know, and that, what happened to me in 1992 was with the Voting Rights Act still intact, meaning that it didn't matter whether we had a VRA or not. We've been experiencing voter suppression and disenfranchisement, you know, in this country, you know, regardless of the laws. So now what we have to do is challenge this notion of entitlement, which seems to be, you know, the rights bread and butter right now. Yes, they have a grievance saying that, you know, this country is a nationalist country. It's for whites, in fact. That's what they're arguing. And so with that, you know, we need to push back. This country is for all. We're very diverse. We're moving into an inclusive future. One where we're going to embrace diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that's at the ballot box in addition to our economy, in addition to our healthcare system, you name it. That is what I'm fighting for. And that is why I'm in this race. That is why I will win. And that is why I'm pushing for a future that's for all of us now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to let you talk more about your policies in a minute. I just want to finish with this. If I'm Karl Rove or one of these right-wing guys, and I'm looking at the big picture. And you know, the one thing they did that nobody noticed until later, went right under Obama's radar screen, was in 2010, they took over the Koch brothers, had a plan. And they didn't spend all that much money. And they took over the redistricting process in the states. And they took over they entrenched these horrendous fascist state legislatures in Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Georgia,
Texas.
So if I'm looking at the big map, I'm going to tell you one thing, and we can talk again in 4 years. The number one thing that's happening to the electoral map in the United States is that Texas is about to become a majority-minority state. And when they lose control of Texas, they are done. That's going to be it.
So the thing about Texas is that already we're seeing San Antonio, Dallas, Houston. These are blue pockets in the middle of a vast sea of red. However, Texas has become purple. It will be blue in just a few short years.
24.
However, getting people turned out to vote, Texas is majority, quote unquote, minority state. With the vast percentage of those who are voters or who should be voters being Latinos. We need to find a way to actually inspire and support Latino participation at the polls. Civic engagement has to be encouraged and reinforced through these populations and African-American populations as well. And that's going to be a challenge. Texas is a vast state. It's one that where we have a huge rural population as well. And so there's going to have to be a movement to really do, you know, a massive voter education and engagement initiative in Texas.
You're 100% right. And I'll put in two other things. First of all, it's one of the lines that we use in all our articles about voter rights, which is that in Texas, you can register to vote with a gun license and a hunting license, but not a student ID.
And that is by design. It's intended to disenfranchise student voters. And yeah. that is part and parcel of what they've been doing. Yeah.
The other thing is, and no one's talked about this, I have never read this before and it just came to mind. The biggest economic shift in Texas is going unnoticed. Texas is no longer an oil and gas state. It's a wind power state. The wind resources in Texas are essentially infinite. And if you look at West Texas and the Panhandle, it's all wind power. And back in the day when they were first starting nuclear power, they said nuclear power was going to be too cheap to meter, right? And that never happened. But what has happened in Texas is that wind power is actually too cheap to meter. There are utilities in West Texas that are giving away electricity free at night because they can't get it off the grid. So just put that on your back burner, Joel.
No, I think what Maya just said is very, very important about registering African-Americans and Hispanics as the key to Democrats winning. So the theory of change and winning by the Democrats used to be you get the swing Democrat. I always like that word, by the way, swing Democrat. No, I better not go there. This is a radio show. But the research shows that that is a fallacious theory, that Democrats win elections when they ramp up the Hispanic and the Black vote, which is why Obama won by such huge margins and why Hillary lost. She lost in districts where there was not a spike in Black and Hispanic vote. So the question I would have for Maya is, if we have Stacey Abrams in Fairfax, who received millions of dollars from Bloomberg, one theory that was in the New York Times that the Democratic Party is stating is let Stacey Abrams fight. Let's have her people at the polls. Let's make what she did in Georgia to mitigate voter purging was they ramped up registration of those who are purged and those who haven't been purged to mitigate those who have been purged. The question I have is, I don't know Stacey Abrams. I don't know too much about Fair Fight. What is their plan of action? And they are partisan. What is the Democratic Party plan? Since you're in Maryland, do you have any idea of what Fair Fight is doing in Maryland or in other states? Because that would make sense to fund Fair Fight in 18 states, as long as the party and those of us who are progressive Democrats can plug into it. I want to plug into it in North Carolina. I don't know how to.
So Fair Fight wasn't prioritized. They were prioritizing battleground states. Maryland is not a battleground state, so they don't have a presence on the ground in Maryland. But from what I understand, their approach is to basically empower average citizens, not just attorneys, to basically be poll watchers, to actually help people to challenge, Harvey, what you were talking about earlier about getting into those electoral systems and making sure we have our people represented. The Fair Fight approach is an approach where there is proactive training of citizens to be, poll watchers, to be poll workers, et cetera. So that there is a literal surround sound around the polls with regards to people who are protecting and defending the right to vote. Now, the Fair Fight, I don't know what the Fair Fight or the Democratic Party strategy is now that we're likely to move to a mail-in ballot scenario in states across the country. That was a poll-heavy approach. Now that we're looking at a poll-light approach and a mail-in ballot system, the question is, what is the strategy? And I haven't seen anybody come up with a national plan around it.
Well, you come up with it.
That leads me to my next point. I'm writing a letter. I'm going to get its first sign. This is through the COVID-19 Emergency Response Group. Maya, you've known me for a very long time. When I got thrown out of a hospital because I was uninsured, I organized the largest movement in the history of this country of uninsured people, launched our movement on Capitol Hill with Barney Frank and Bernie Sanders. That's how I got into Congress. I didn't wait for the Democrats or anyone else to do universal health care. Conyers, myself, you, Congressman Cummings. Actually, Congressman Cummings was one of the leaders of the universal health care movement, just for the record, because I was there. We can't wait for the Democratic Party to act. We who are progressive Democrats, I know that you have listeners who are green. Even if you're green, it doesn't matter. The Democratic Party is there. They got the resources. This letter is going to go to every single chair of the Democratic Party in every state. It'll be signed by every state Democratic Party chair and elected officials. It's going to go to Perez saying, here's the strategy that we're proposing. And it's also going to go to the Biden campaign. What do you think of that idea? We take a proactive stance instead of waiting.
I'm happy to do it. So Harvey, you should know that you mentioned earlier about somebody being a political scientist. That's my PhD. I'm in political science. I'm paying close attention to what's happening here in Maryland, at least. And there are standards that I think that we should all meet. One is that there should be no reason why anybody has to put a postage paid stamp on any ballot in this country. And so we need to make sure that the submission of ballots is actually free. The other thing is that state voter systems actually have the correct address for people. 20% of our April 28th election ballots were actually invalidated because they didn't have the right address for people. People moved. And so we're going to have to, another thing that you have to make sure that the voting rolls are actually up to date in terms of people's addresses. And so there's got to be a standard and the best practice that we put into place with regards to that. In terms of the printing of ballots, we need to make sure that people have sufficient time, that they arrive with sufficient time in the mail for people to do their research on candidates, for them to consider their choices. And that means that there's none of this last minute mailing thing or no ballots lost in the mail situation, which means that there's going to have to be an accountability structure with regards to the mailing process itself. And then the verification process, we're going to have to look at how to put a verification system in place so people can actually check, perhaps online, perhaps via phone, to find out if their ballot has been received and if it has been counted. And if it has not, then absolutely that there's got to be a way that people prior to the election ending that can actually correct or repair their ballot. So, I mean, we're going to have to be thinking on multiple levels. I don't know if this is all going to be able to happen before November, but we have to raise the biggest stink that we can, because already here in Maryland, we're seeing the downside of the mail-in ballot system.
Yes, and you're 100% right. But I'll just reiterate that what we had before was worse. And at least we can get our hands around this. We're not fighting precinct by precinct with 40 different technologies. And we do have, and this is important, there is a machine, John Brakey, who's one of our people, knows all about it, where the paper ballot can be put in, you make a ballot image, right? And then you keep the paper ballot on the other side. So the paper ballots are preserved, the mail-in ballots. And then you tally the election with the ballot images. So you can get a very quick outcome, and you don't have people slaving away to count all the ballots. And then if there's a question, you can do a recount because you got the paper ballots. One of the things to watch for is the deadline for reporting. You know, the governorship and the Senate seat in Florida 2018 were stolen by, or 2019, were stolen because they couldn't meet the deadline. And that's where, you know, Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, in 2000, he was an attorney for the thugs who went in and broke up the recount in South Florida that made Bush president. So you obviously know a lot about this. We're 5.5 months out. You know, as Bill Clinton said, what? 4 months is a lifetime, 5 months is a lifetime in politics. We have the time to do this. And we got to get people, if you want to be our coordinator in Maryland, please. You know, because you know the issue, it's not rocket science. There's about 20 major points on vote by mail that we got to protect ourselves on, which is an improvement. It is. I mean, I had the ideal voting experience in LA. I got my ballot in the mail. I filled it out. I walked it in to an elementary school on Sunday. There was nobody there but the voters. The people were happy to see me. I signed everything, I sealed it, I dropped it in a box. That's the way it's got to happen. So that we've had souls to the polls, which is a big deal, which is why a lot of people in the African-American community don't like vote by mail, because they'll lose that. But the point is, you get everybody's ballot in hand, and then everybody walks them into the polls. They don't have to stand in line. You just stand there, fill it out, drop it in. So, you know,
but it's also not clear. And what I think that we should also focus on in this process is the registration of new voters in the mail-in yes. ballot system. And sure that people have the ability to have registration all the way up to the day of the election. I mean, these yes. are things that we need to focus on in addition to, you know, how to make sure that people mail in their ballots correctly. So, yeah, there's a whole process, and I'm happy to work with you all on that.
Good, good, good. So I will send you a document. I'll put you on the list. I cooked up this document about 20 different points about vote by mail that we got to watch. But, you know, there's no excuse. We got 5.5 months. It's a all lifetime. Right. We can do this. Okay, so you are a fabulous I appreciate your forbearance. You did 45 minutes on this. You have a great platform of other issues. Fire away. Tell us what you're doing. Why are you running for Congress, please?
Well, I'm running for Congress, not just to build on the legacy of my late husband, but to actually fight for our future. I mean, it's all on the line, and COVID-19 is only kind of further illuminated the deep inequality and the deep disparities that we have in this country. And so for the last 20 plus odd years, I have been focused on, as I mentioned earlier, equity, diversity, and inclusion. And I will continue to do that, particularly here in Maryland 7th, where we have deep levels of inequality. Like other places around the country. And so, you know, on the COVID-19 thing, I have signed on to this Bold New Deal strategy, which is a three-part initiative. The first part is taking a human-centric approach and building a national plan around a public health response to this that addresses the disparities. So you basically, you know, have the testing, the contact tracing, the isolation, the essential personal protective gear for essential workers, and an approach that actually targets those communities that have been hardest hit. So seniors, assisted living facilities, prisons, detention facilities, communities of color, lower income communities. These are all vulnerable communities who have proven by their rates of infection to be vulnerable. That means that we have a universal public health strategy with targeted levers to make sure that those who have been marginalized get priority treatment. The second part of this is access to healthcare. Immediately, I am arguing that we need immediate access to healthcare. For those who are uninsured, they're either immediately let into Medicaid, or we drop the 65-year age requirement for Medicare and immediately let them into Medicare. Over the intermediate term, I argue that we actually need a Medicare for All national healthcare system. And that is to ensure that, you know, all the climatologists say that this is not going to be the last coronavirus we see. And because of the changing climate, that novel diseases will be coming up at a more frequent rate in the future. That means that we've got to be ready. And we can't be ready with a system that leaves so many people out. And then the third part is economic. That we need a several-part economic plan for the nation. The first is a massive stimulus, and that takes place in terms of a clean and green infrastructure development strategy, where we basically address all of the neglected needs of the nation that we've neglected for the last half century as a way to also help bolster a federal jobs program where we provide anybody who wants a job with an opportunity to work. And then, of course, making sure that we have income security, food security, and housing security for the people. And so with that, you know, it's a three-part strategy that addresses all of the needs. And it's making sure that we have nobody who's left out, left behind, or unhoused in this era and hopefully beyond. So, you know, I am just pleased as punch with this Bold New Deal for the COVID-19 era. But for Maryland in particular, and for the 7th Congressional District, I also have what I call the HOPE Plan. And the H stands for Healthy and Safe Communities, O stands for Opportunities for Youth, P stands for Prosperous Families, and E stands for Equitable Development and Economic Justice. And so, you know, everything that I've talked about with regards to COVID-19, plus some, you know, the expansion of Social Security, the passage of a universal family care plan, making sure that we're addressing issues like baby bonds so that we can get to the issue of poverty. I'm actually now supporting more of a basic income approach, but I call it a progressive basic income approach that's based on the wealth of a household. You know, we need to still tackle lower prescription drug costs. I've already talked about Medicare for all. For us, gun violence is a challenge. And so I am focused on how do we have a public health approach to gun violence that gets at the root causes of this issue. And so with that, you know, it's a big agenda, one that I am ready to tackle and I have the experience to tackle. And I'm looking forward to getting the job done.
Well, good for you. Fantastic. And by the way, as a historian, I have read the Second Amendment. And in fact, I can recite the Second Amendment. Okay. And I can recite actually both the First and the Second Amendments, but I won't bore you. But, the Second Amendment says that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. And what are these people thinking? There's no guarantee that everybody can own a gun. You have to be in a militia to own a gun. It's got to be well-regulated. And you got to be able to prove that your owning a gun serves the security of a free state. I just thought I'd throw that in. So I'm hoping you're going to be in Congress. We need your voice, and we need your and you have a vested interest in protecting the vote in this next 5.5 months. You know,
we all do. Frankly, Harvey, absolutely. This is the most dangerous administration in the history of the United States of America. Elijah passed away fighting the Trump administration tooth and nail. They were trying to subvert government oversight. They don't view Congress as a separate and equal branch of government. And they've been basically trying to nullify the right to Congress to oversee their activities, which are, by the way, corrupt, nefarious, malfeasant, and all of the above. They have tried to usurp and certainly absorb the federal or the judiciary branch of government. And we've seen what they've done with the Justice Department, where basically it's become a tool of the Trump administration. And I would argue that they're doing the same and are trying to attempt to do the same with the entire justice system. And so this is a dangerous administration. They are trying to dismantle our democracy in front of us. It is fascist. We are seeing fascism up close and personal. This is what it looks like. We don't want an authoritarian government, and we have a responsibility to make sure that we leave a democracy intact for our children, because a democracy is the only way we're going to ensure their freedom.
Absolutely. I will say one thing, and I'm calling Joel again. I just put up a piece at Reader Supported News. We've been through this before. In 1918 to 1920, Woodrow Wilson actually became a fascist dictator. And they were afraid that Eugene V. Debs, the Social Democrat, was going to become president in 1920. And they launched a fascist assault. I'll send you the article. And there was a plague, the influenza, that Woodrow Wilson, like Donald Trump, was personally responsible for spreading throughout the United States. 650,000 Americans died in 1918 from the flu that could have been prevented. And God forbid we should get that many people dead this time. But you're 100% right about Donald Trump. Joel, did you want to say something?
Yeah, what I'm going to say may upset some of your listeners. And I'm going to say this respectfully. And this is to the Bernie voters, many of them who are saying, if it's not Bernie, I'm not going to vote for Biden. That Biden is a corporate Democrat. Therefore, we shouldn't vote for Biden. This was what my friend Ralph Nader said in 2000, he said there was a duopoly, called them Republicrats. I beg to differ. John Conyers, Ron Dellums, Barbara Lee, Maxine Waters, Dennis Kucinich, Alan Grayson, I can go on and on. Cummings are progressive Democrats. John Lewis, progressive Democrats. One third of the Democratic caucus are now members of the Progressive Caucus. A large percentage of people within the Democratic Party are Bernie-crats. So Bernie is at the table with Biden. There's these joint task forces. The most dangerous thing that we can do to this authoritarian dictator, the most dangerous president in the last 100 years, is to say we're not going to vote for Bernie Sanders. I'm sorry, for Joe Biden, because he's not Bernie. as Paul Krugman would say, and I'm saying this respectfully, this is intellectual confusion. These are mythologies. It's just not true. With the Republicans, you're not going to go anywhere with Medicare for all, jobs for all, housing for all. With a Democrat, you at least have an opportunity to go progressive. Imagine if Martin Luther King had said, we're not going to vote in the civil rights movement. We're not going to vote for Johnson because he's too much of a Dixiecrat. And therefore, we're going to let Nixon win. And the reason why, according to Congressman Walter Fauntleroy told me, the civil rights movement made a deal with Johnson. We'll vote for you and we'll support you if you support a great society. The question is, Harvey, why pray tell, would a Bernie supporter not vote knowing that this dangerous dictator who's going to kill the planet because he's not doing anything on climate change, why give him another 4 more years? I can't understand it.
Well, here's my take on this, Joel. Let me jump in real quick. I agree with you 100%, but the focus is wrong. I mean, there's what, 30? We got 5 minutes left, so we can do this quick. And Maya, I'm going to say this fast as I can so I can give you more time. Okay, we have this argument every year. We've had this argument every 4 years since 1896. And I won't give you the hour lecture on what happened in 1896, but it's been the same story for 124 years. What we need to do is, okay, you Greens, do this. Here's our point. But what we got to do is what Maya's talking about is deal with vote by mail. There's, what, 30 voters between in the Green Party who might change their mind one way or another. Just like you say that the Democratic strategy of going after marginal, you know, conservative Democrats is self-defeating. And Maya has said, we have to go after the communities of color and the young people who are going to be the future. Those 30 Greens who aren't going to vote for Joe Biden, mazel tov, good luck to you. It's fine. You know, those marginal mid-road Democrats who may vote for Trump or not, fine, do what you're going to do. What we need is the communities of color and the millennials to come out and police vote by mail. That's what's got to happen. If the Republicans are going to have 50,000 fascist thugs at the polls, we need 500,000. And that ain't going to be the Greens. It's going to be the millennials. It's going to be the people of color. That's my feeling about it. Maya?
But Joel, you mentioned, and by the way, Joel, he's been a great friend for 20 years. He's been the leader at the forefront of all the critical issues. Joel, thank you for your leadership. I consider you a deep and dear friend, and I love you to life. Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you.
I think that you made a critical point, and that is, you know, what are we going to get for our vote? And I do think that there's an opportunity here for the Bernie-crats, for communities of color, for young people, to align to say, we need, if we're going to support you, and yes, we understand that there is no other choice with regards to Donald Trump, but we actually need a bold new deal for COVID-19. We need Medicare for all. We need for you to assure us, Joe Biden, that you are going to prioritize this because this is something that we all need. And that means that we're working in collaboration to pressure this administration to basically do right by us.
Amen.
I agree. And there's another thing. Joe Biden, you have got to promise with blood on your finger or whatever that you will not concede this election without a full recount. If God forbid, you know, Trump says he's won, you cannot under any circumstances, which is what Hillary did and John Kerry did, and Al Gore did, you cannot walk away because we know they're going to try and steal it. And we need a strong advocate who's not going to let them steal it again. It was stolen in 2000. It was stolen in 2004. It was stolen in 2016. And none of these Democrats stood up and fought. So, Joe, you know, if you're going to be the nominee, we don't want you conceding on November 4th under any circumstances. We got 1 minute left. Maya, I'll give it to you, please. You've been a great guest.
We know that if he picks Stacey Abrams, she never actually conceded her election.
Right.
She'll stiffen his spine somewhat. So, you know, definitely we've got to go in here with a fighting spirit. We do not have time nor do we have the luxury of having a weak candidate. We actually have to go in here with strength, and we need to fight till the very bitter end, and we need to win.
Absolutely. Maya Cummings, how do people get a hold of you real quick?
MayaForCongress.com. And if you're on Facebook, at Maya for Congress. Same thing for Twitter and Instagram.
All right, I'm going to send you the URL of this show. Thank you guys in New York for running this. We'll have this available to everybody. Joel Siegel, thank you as always. And Maya, sure. I hope you win. And we need you in Maryland.
She's going to win.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you will be our mainstay in Maryland to make sure the vote by mail actually works. We've got 5.5 months. There are no surprises here. Thank you in New York. Thank you, everybody. Another great hour here at the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. And we'll see you after hydroxychloroquine does its work on the guy in the White House. Take care, everybody.
Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia?